Good afternoon. It's 2:08 p.m. on February 19th, Sunday afternoon, I believe. It could be Saturday. I've lost track, to tell you the truth. I'm pretty sure today is Sunday. It's difficult to tell with everybody home from school and work so often. There's no real tag to the week for me. And I had one kid homesick all week last week. They're going to not go to school until Wednesday this week. My wife was sick, I think, 4 days out of five last week. So it's a rather odd calendarless existence at the moment, which is a bit troubling, because what that means is that the days slip by without my actually getting anything done or anything significant. I worked today a little bit on divine inspiration. I discovered some things about the way I was going with it that didn't quite hold up. Wasn't consistent in the story. I had to go back and repolish that last act a little bit. I still haven't found the last line yet, but I'm getting a little bit done. I did some recording for Doc Scalzi's I'm Going to Balticon promo speech, and I did some lines for Veronica Jaguer's new project. I also heard from Abby Hilton, and apparently the lines that I sent her needed some retakes, and also they were a bit boxed up because I apparently overlaid some of the correct narration with incorrect narration when I was doing the inserts. So I have to try to find out what went wrong with that. Probably we'll just re-edit the original WAV file. She did say that there's half a dozen lines that have to be retaken, but given that it was 10 chapters worth, that's not too bad. So I am going to cancel my writing workshop. I'm not going to go away at the end of March, which is a bit on the bummer side. I was really looking forward to getting away, to having a week where we did nothing but write. But looking what they're going to be doing, this is not the way I want to spend that week. Sitting in meetings for 6 hours a day, reading 60,000 words from people who are not at a level that I'm comfortable reading. And the idea is where I don't believe we're supposed to offer feedback, but we are supposed to read what everybody else writes. This isn't going to work. I should have realized that when the call went out for printers, we need to bring printers so that we can print out copies of our stuff. I should have realized that that was a bit of a sign. So I need to email the coordinators and tell them I won't be joining them in March. Beyond that, I don't know. It's I'm out of the wind. It was pretty breezy here when I started. I'll probably walk into it again when I get around the corner, but right now I've got a nice windbreak beside me. It's kind of a gray, overcast afternoon. I'm making corned beef and cabbage for dinner, so we'll have a nice meal for supper tonight. It's one of our favorites. I probably can do without the extra salt, but between the cabbages and the extra vegetable materials, I think it would be fine. So it's also one of the favorites here at the house, so that makes it kind of a special Sunday here. Beyond that, let's see, what am I thinking about? I was reading this morning, students, of course they posted a bunch of stuff late last night after I went to bed, which is 11 o'clock their time. Actually, it was midnight their time. And there's a lot of posts this morning that should have been done yesterday. But they're getting there. I got to see what they say about the next set of chapters. The first set of chapters in Hughes talks about the early 1900s in terms of technology and how it's a return to the Garden of Eden, how men viewed ideas like manifest destiny and the idea of the machine in the garden that would create for us abundance so that we would no longer need to work, which of course is somewhat problematic because for a lot of us, work is identity, work is who we are, work is what we do. And without work, we have no meaning in life, which becomes an interesting challenge. If work is your meaning, then why would you give it up? Of course, a lot of people do jobs that they don't like. And it's a different problem. It's an economic problem. I still struggle with them to help them understand that a lot of what they're dealing with are not technical problems, are not technological problems. They're dealing with political decisions and the fallout of those political decisions, which involve the implementation of technology in ways that are perhaps inappropriate, or at least misguided. It's interesting to me that we have so many people who are making decisions in areas over which they have absolutely no knowledge, or even what knowledge they have is badly flawed. The Congress making laws about the internet when they don't really understand how the internet works. I understand why they do it, but I don't understand how they can actually look at themselves in the mirror. I mean, it goes back to education and politics and the reality that a lot of people vote in ways that are inappropriate in order to avoid a political controversy that is not necessarily valid or true. The one that's going around now is if you don't vote for this anti-piracy, and I think it's an ACTA statement, somebody in the EU, European Union, said, if you don't back this bill, then you're siding with child pornographers. It's like, whoa, hold the phone. Just a second here. There's a lot about the internet that has nothing to do with child pornography that this bill is going to harm. Not potentially harm, but actually harm. So the idea that if you don't back this rather misguided bill, that you're siding with child pornographers, is a bit on the problematic side in terms of logic. And the problem is that most people who hear that statement and who then hear that, oh, well, you don't want to vote for this minister or that minister because he voted against this bill and sided with child pornographers. Like, well, those are not necessarily related ideas. Now, you can vote against the bill and still be against child pornographers. And so it's like the free speech argument and the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. Your happiness in swinging your fist ends when it becomes about to hit my nose. And that becomes a bit of a problem. And it's like free speech. In order to support free speech for everyone, we have to support the speech of people that we don't agree with. We have to listen to things, or at least allow them to say things that we don't like. Because otherwise, somebody might not like what we say and decide that we shouldn't have the right to say it either. So that's a bit of a problem. I understand the issue with child pornography, I do. And I don't I don't really think that this is an appropriate thing to be doing. But to stifle everyone in order to try to stamp out a small percentage seems misguided. It's the Velvet Jail. I don't care how comfortable the jail is. I'm still in jail. That's a long way from being secure. It's the argument for TSA, for Homeland Security. If you got nothing to hide, then it doesn't matter what we say. It doesn't matter that we look. It's like, yeah, I accept it. I don't really think that's what we meant by freedom of speech and due process and freedom from unreasonable search and seizure. So I don't know. It's interesting because the students, of course, are bringing up the issue of freedom of religion and the attack on Christianity. Yeah, war on me the way you war on Christianity, that would be good. Because then I'd be tax deductible. I wouldn't need to pay taxes. I could refrain from political commentary. And of course, they don't have to. But I'd be willing to trade off some. At any rate, so yeah, the idea of freedom of religion follows the same idea that pursuit of happiness and your pursuit of swinging your fist ending at my nose, freedom of religion and your right to practice your religion ends at the point where you try to tell me which religion I have to practice and how. And it particularly ends if you tell me that I have to practice yours, because I don't. And I won't. So it's a very interesting idea. It's a very interesting dynamic that the students are wading through right now, looking at Hughes and the relationship between technology and religion. And the idea of religion as cultural artifact is not quite in their purview yet. They're getting there. They haven't quite tumbled to the notion that religion is a cultural artifact, and it's part of what I keep telling them when I say we don't live in the same culture. This notion that Americans have a uniform culture, a homogeneous culture, is only true to a certain extent. It's very much not true when we start factoring in how many different factions, how many different ways people live in the United States and what those actually mean. People who live in cities have a very different culture than people who live in rural areas, particularly rural poor. And even poverty isn't a unifying theme, because being rural poor is quite a different experience than being urban poor, I would suspect. Now, I don't really know that for sure, to be perfectly frank. I stopped being part of poor when I moved out of the house at 17 and joined the service. Well, I didn't make very much money. I no longer live at a level that constituted poverty, even though my family continued to do so for many years afterwards. So it's a really interesting challenge. It's an interesting idea. How do we look at American culture? How do we look at society as a fragmented collection of differing cultures, some of which overlap, some of which have nothing to do with each other? I noticed it this week too, in the discussion about publishing and bestseller lists, and how the agent writing the blog post said that one of the ways that it was important to keep up with popular culture, and that the way to do that is that it's important to understand who's on the bestseller list and why. So you really need to be aware of who else is there, because you would really like to be a bestseller. And the truth is, I can't afford to be a bestseller. I make too much money being not a bestseller, because in order to be, for example, and I've said this more than once, on the New York Times list, I have to be signed with a mainstream New York press. I need to be signed with a press that ships to bookstores, because that's what the New York Times measures, books ship to bookstores. And so I'm not going to be there. I did mention this the other day, I know I did, because this is leading up to the PGA leaderboard, and I know I said that. So I'll stop. But it's all tied together, and what never ceases to amaze me when I teach this class is how much the intersection of what I'm doing in publishing has a component in the class that has to do with culture, and what constitutes the current culture in the United States, or even for that matter in the world, because I really do see the internet as a kind of leveler, as a way of approaching a world culture. I'm in contact with people from all over the world all the time, every day. And that colors my perception of what I think about the United States, because quite frankly, a lot of people don't like the United States for reasons that seem to me quite justified and valid. So it's an interesting challenge. It's interesting ideas that come from this class, and I hope are going to result in new ideas for me to write about. I'm trying to get Divine Inspiration done because it's the one that's closest to completion. If I can get that one done, I can put it away. I might be able to even publish it. I could certainly read it and send it off to Tony C. Smith, see what he has to say about it, see if he wants to run it. Perhaps they'll put it on Tales to Terrify. Oh, shoot, that reminds me. I owe him a story for that as well. He sent it to me a couple weeks ago. Ouch. Well, tomorrow's Monday. With any luck at all, it'll be a relatively quiet day with just the kids home from school. We're doing laundry and such today, so recording this afternoon is pretty much out. It's impossible to record anything meaningful with the washer and dryer running. Here comes the breeze. I made the turn. I'm walking north alongside the park. It looks kind of gray, ugly right at the moment. All the grasses are all packed down from the snowpack from a couple weeks ago. But the snow is almost completely gone. You can see it in the picture this afternoon, how little snow actually remains in the view. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of what else there is. I've only got another minute or two before I make it to the back gate. I'm trying to think what else I wanted to talk about. Oh, the maps. For those of you who have been noticing that the map hasn't actually plotted my path on it since mile 520, and I think actually I'm going to go over mile 600 today. I know Paulette made me the first 1,000 miles. But apparently she only sent me the first 520. So she's away right now. And when she gets home, she'll send me the next couple 300 miles. So we'll get those caught up. The file names will be the same. It's just referencing a file that doesn't exist. And what I got to do is get it moved up to the server so the server can find it. And then it will plot. Life will be good. And we'll be back on track. I actually have to look and see. I may have walked off the edge of the map again. Every once in a while, I have to change the frame. because I walk off the edge of the map and I have to slide the map over so I can keep it in view. It seems incredible that I should have walked 600 miles since I started this project, but I guess 200 miles a day, 2 miles a day, it adds up over time, particularly 300 days worth. Okay, and on that note, I'm at the back gate, and I'll talk to you tomorrow, because tomorrow is another day.